We're excited to announce that our very own podcasting platform, Zencastr, has become a new sponsor to the show. Check out the podcast discount link in our show notes and stay tuned for why we love using Zen for the podcast.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast. Hello and welcome to the Archaeology Show, episode 109.
On today's show, we talk about the anthropology and archaeology of the Harry Potter universe.
Let's dig a little more magically. So as we mentioned in some previous episodes, we are going to do some special fun episodes of the Archaeology Show. And it's just because I've been recording these with Rachel.
Hello.
And, you know, we live on the road together in an RV, so we do probably 99.9% of things together.
Yes.
And when we do those things, sometimes we geek out. And because we were at Universal Studios at some time in the past to see the Wizarding World of Harry Potter and other things, it made us think about Harry Potter and other movies like Harry Potter from an archaeological, if not anthropological, perspective. So this new series is just called the title of the movie, comma, anthropologically.
Yeah, we have always been big Harry Potter fans. So the recent experience of going to Universal Studios is what caused us to basically decide that Harry Potter had to be our first victim.
I mean, I don't know about big Harry Potter fans. I don't have a sweatshirt or anything.
Mine says Ravenclaw. I also have a shirt that says Expecto Patronum on it. Let's not worry about it.
Let's not even talk about it.
No, I was a teenager when I first discovered Harry Potter. I think three of the books were out, and I was babysitting some of the neighbor kids, and they were reading the first one, I think. But they had all three of them. And one of them, the youngest one, wanted me to read a little bit to him. And so I did. And I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever written. So like 16-year-old me borrowed all three of those books from the kids, read all of them in probably half a day, because that's how I would do back then. Mm-hmm. And I've been hooked ever since. So mm-hmm. Yeah, 20 years later.
One of the things that makes this series so compelling and what lends itself well to a show like this is that it is so, for lack of a better word, realistic, right? I mean, yeah. I know it's filled with magic and magical creatures and things like that, but it is set in a world where you think that, hey, maybe that could just exist. And that's the best kind of fiction. Yeah. It's like Star Trek. So many people love Star Trek because we just feel like, yeah, that's cool. We're going to be there in a few hundred years. That's right. That mm-hmm. seems legit. Mm-hmm. Like, why wouldn't we be?
Yeah. I think some of our favorite both fantasy and science fiction series are that sort of marrying true real life with this imagined world. So, mm-hmm. And Harry Potter, of course, is probably the most famous / most popular of them, at least right now. So,
right. And another thing that lends itself well to this series, and as we've thought about other movies to do, is this happens in parallel with like our world right now. It's just a fantasy world that's happening in parallel. That's why we couldn't even do a series like Star Trek, because it's literally our world, but later.
Yeah. We can't really pass judgment on the world that hasn't yet happened.
Well,
yet.
And it's our future is what we're led to believe.
Yeah.
Right? Like Harry Potter has nothing to do with our future or past. It's in a parallel universe that is just slightly similar, except there's magic.
Yeah. And that actually brings up one of my first questions, which is the Wizarding World, is it a parallel universe to ours? Well, let me rephrase. Is it a parallel universe to the Muggle world, or is it in the same world, but the wizards just hide it from all the Muggles? So same plane of existence or different planes of existence?
Right. And let's discuss that, because that brings up a good way to tell you how we're going to do this series in these episodes. So we're going to talk about that kind of stuff in this first segment, mm-hmm. you know, setting up the show. What does it look like? What movie are we talking about? What TV series are we talking about? Stuff like that. And the second segment, we'll talk about culture and what the culture would look like. There's some very specific, I can't even really get more specific because it depends on the movie you're talking about, but we're going to talk about culture. And then the third segment, I'd like to talk about archaeology. So that's basically how we're going to do it. But as far as setting up the universe goes, now, again, you have to remember, because it's hard, because this is such a realistic show, we're not talking about real world. We're talking about the Harry Potter universe.
Right.
So
we're leaving our current world. And we are taking our broomsticks over here to Harry Potter universe. So we're there now. Okay.
Yeah. So in the Harry Potter universe, your question is the wizarding world just invisible to muggles, non-magical people, if you're not a Harry Potter fan?
Right.
Or do things in that universe actually take place in another plane of existence? That's really kind of a parallel dimension or something like that.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. For me, that completely shapes how we look at the way the wizarding world and the muggle world interact with each other, both from that cultural perspective and the archaeology perspective. And really the whole thing is knowing how those worlds interact together.
And of course, the answer has to be both, because they play with space and misdirection all the time. There's numerous times in the series where they mention that, you know, muggles see what they want to see.
Yeah.
There's the night bus scene in Prisoner of Azkaban. We just watched it.
Yeah.
I can't just pull that out of my noggin. So, I mean, I like the movies, but I think you probably could.
Don't sell yourself short. Have.
If we hadn't just seen that movie like 2 days ago, I couldn't pull that out. But no, they say, aren't you afraid that somebody's going to see it? And it's like, oh, they're stupid. They see what they want to see, basically, is what they said. And same thing, we just watched last night the Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they go to the headquarters, which if you've ever been to the Universal Studios Wizarding World of Harry Potter, they have this there. But the whole apartment just like unsucks from the other apartments, right? It's just like they move over and that one's right there. And that's a case where it's clearly in another plane of existence.
It must, because it's in between two existing real world houses.
Now, there's another theory, though. It's not necessarily another plane of existence, but it's a manipulation of space-time, if we're going to get super geeky about it. Because another example of this is Hermione's bag in later series.
Oh, yeah, and the expanding tent at the Quidditch World Cup.
Exactly. So they're playing with the concept of space-time, and you go in, and you're not in another plane of existence. You're just in a different version, where I don't even know how to explain it, but they're expanding it internally like that. And
it's like if the universe is like here's the edge of the universe. You can't see my arm, but I'm like drawing a line. I'm putting the edge of the universe between you and me, and there's like a line here. And like the tent that they all stayed in at the Quidditch World Cup is like a little bulbous like push out into whatever's on the other side of the edge of our
existence. It's like a tumor existence. On the edge of our universe.
Oh, man, that's like so hard to wrap my brain around.
I know. But that's where you get theories of like the bubble universes, like the multi-universe theory that I think, what is his name? The astrophysicist in the wheelchair.
Oh, Stephen Hawking?
Stephen Hawking. It's a terrible way for me to say that, but everybody knows.
True.
But he proposed first, I think he was one of the first ones to propose the multi-universe theory, where universes are like bubbles floating around in this weird space, and they sometimes intersect and interact with each other with catastrophic circumstances or catastrophic effect. But that's kind of what we're talking about, right? You got this thing. So if that's the case for, say, the headquarters building, the apartment that squishes in, presumably when they go inside, it
squishes back up. In. It has to.
But what happens when you want to open the door? Do you have to like wait? I don't know. What if you got to leave in a hurry, right?
So one of the things we don't want to do in this episode is start poking holes in the plot of Harry Potter, because we'll just disclaimer right now, like we totally understand there are true actual holes in the plot, and we are okay with that because we love it.
I mean, the books, I don't know if J.K. Rowling had the idea all the way through the final book, if she like had the full thing written out when she started to write book one, or if she just hoped that it would develop. I don't really know if she had thought that far out, but as you develop, and especially didn't the movies start coming out prior to the last books getting done? Like all the books weren't out before the movie started coming out, I think
you're right about that. Yeah.
So things started to develop around the culture of the movies that she probably had to answer some questions from superfans and do things by changing some things in the plot line and the story. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, most of what we're saying really is based on watching the movies. And we know from different mm-hmm. directors and different movies produced years apart that things are just going to change and there's going to be inconsistencies in the editing room. So,
yeah, I mean, true. And we have both read the books,
mm-hmm.
but I know for me, it's probably been 10 years.
Yeah, me too.
I remember when the final book came out, because we pre-ordered it from Barnes & Noble back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I reread all of them at that time. And that's probably the last time I read the book. So,
yeah.
So it's been a while. But
there's got to be holes there, too.
Yeah, you I'm know, sure there is. Holes, but we don't want to poke holes in the plot line.
No, we're living in that universe. That.
Yeah, we're just in that universe and we're taking it as it is.
Right.
And trying to figure out how the magical and the muggle, non-magical, intersect.
So there's some sort of weird space-time dimension thing. There's also, yeah. obviously, the ability to cloak things magically.
Yes.
By either actually cloaking them, as Harry and Ron flew the car around the train station there.
Oh, yeah. Didn't they just have, like, a button they pressed in the car and it yeah. just went, like, shimmered out of existence?
Yeah, it looked like it was, like, the choke button or something like that for the engine because it was an older car. And he just, like, pushes it in or something and the car just, like, engaged cloaking device. So
it was very Star Trek. Yeah.
But then there's other things that are just invisible for other reasons. Like, again, in the one we just watched, the one after Prisoner of Azkaban.
Goblet of Fire.
Yeah, four. Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
When, well, it's actually the one after that. So the one, the Order of Phoenix, because at the beginning, uh-huh. there's those creatures that pull the carts for the students that pull the carriages.
Oh, the ones that they can't see yeah. unless you've seen somebody die.
Even the magical yeah. people can't see them yeah. unless they've, you know, seen, unless they've
magical creature. Yeah.
yeah. So it's a magical creature, but other mm-hmm. things can be imbued with those powers to make them invisible mm-hmm. to anybody they want, typically non-magical people.
I mean, this is probably getting out of just the intro to the series, but I wonder if muggles can see those creatures that you can only see if you've seen somebody die. Like a muggle yeah. who's seen somebody die. Can they see those creatures?
I imagine they've got inherently two layers of magic on top of them.
So
they've got you can only see me if you're alive and you're magical.
Right.
Right. So,
and we just have to take that at face value.
Right,
they say
right.
that can be a thing. And so therefore it is.
That is knowledge of the magical world allow you to see magical objects?
Oh, that's a good question. Because a lot of the muggle kids yeah. have parents that know
yeah.
what they're doing. Like, I mean, Harry's adoptive parents, I suppose. His aunt and uncle, they know about magic.
Yeah, and there are people, like there's the Minister of Magic, and I think in one of the last sets of books and movies, they mention talking to the actual British Prime Minister and warning him of this thing that's coming along.
Oh, right.
Because the British Prime Minister must be aware.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, rounding out this segment, we also want to talk about, in context of the culture that we're going to talk about in the next segment, how old is all this? Where does this intersect?
Oh,
and
yeah.
we were kind of having this conversation before we started recording here around our campfire here in the Everglades. And
like you do.
I know, like you do. And saw alligator today, MBD. So anyway, so we were talking about that and we were like, well, how did magic start? So how old are we talking here? Because we obviously have histories mentioned in the books that go back thousands of years, right? But obviously it's way older than that. And magic had to have started by one of probably just two means. And that would either be something came to this earth that imbued magic on the planet and creatures became magical and some humans became magical and that just became a heritable trait. But or it just evolved as a thing, right? It makes more sense that it evolved because there are magical creatures and mm-hmm. we're all related. All animals and insects and everything are all related if you go back far enough.
Right.
So if you go back far enough, my question would be, well, first off, you can pretty much tell that magic didn't evolve with humans because there are magical creatures.
Right.
So there was a common ancestor that humans have with all the magical creatures that was magical. And that creature was able to tap into magic that presumably was always there and they were able to use it.
And all the different creatures basically branch off from that one common ancestor.
I mean, that's how evolution works.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Which is pretty cool if you think about it, if that's the case, because that means magic has to go back at the very least, you know, several million years, if not tens of millions or hundreds of millions of years, which is going to factor into the archaeology discussion later on, because if magic has been around that long, you'd think we'd see some stuff on it. But I don't want to blow, you know, blow the punchline in season three or segment three.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just started so many questions rolling in my mind. And just feel free to stop me if you want me to save it for a future segment. But
well, we're going
to
talk about archaeology in segment three. So
yeah, well, just back to the origins of magical humans and magical creatures. And you're saying one common ancestor as an option. But now I'm wondering if what if there was like an environmental event that affected some creatures and caused magic to develop. And this would have had to have been hundreds of thousands of years ago too, probably, but like maybe it affected, you know, a dinosaur line, and that's how we ended up getting dragons out of that. And maybe it affected, oh gosh, I don't even know. Like, I can't even think
almost
of
like
any
radiation.
Other. Yeah. Yeah. Like the Spider-Man effect a little bit, right? Like, not that they all got bit by spiders, but like maybe some kind of environmental factor caused magic to develop and create these magical creature lines, including the human one. But
well, and that could be it. My sort of somewhat underlying theory to that is that in this universe, magic is probably just a fundamental force, and magic is almost like a fundamental particle that controls magic. Like the actual force in Star Wars is, I'm going to geek out, it's midichlorians, I think they call it, which are the little creatures in your blood that allow, if you have more of those, you have more interaction with the force. They're like the catalyst that allows you to interact with the force. There's got to be something magical like that, because Harry Potter is a very magical person. Like, he's a powerful wizard. Well, what makes him powerful? He must have a better interaction with the magic than other people do. So he's able to interact with this force or particle or something better than other people. And some people can't do it at all.
Oh, like the squibs, right? Who are of magical families or magical origins, but they can't do magic.
Right.
So yeah, you could be right. It could be interacting with some kind of environmental force. So maybe that environmental force appeared in the environment at some point, however long ago, and the creatures here started interacting with it when it appeared. I don't know what would cause it to appear. Maybe the like asteroid that destroyed the dinosaurs. I mean, maybe it brought a force with it, a magical force.
It could have caused a disruption or some sort of heat element or something like that that brought magic into the world and had people interact with it. My point is that I think magic has always been there in that universe, and it's throughout the entire universe. It's just, can you interact with it or not?
Right.
And something could have happened, to your point, that caused species to become interacting with it.
To actually happen.
And it's a heritable trait.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's all speculation, obviously, because we're kind of just making this up as we go. But
not only speculation, it's fiction. So
No. You said that we were leaving our world and going to the Harry Potter world for this episode. So don't take that away from me.
That's right. Well, what I am going to take from you is segment one. We'll be back with segment two in just a minute. Chris Webster here for the Archaeology Podcast Network. We strive for high quality interviews and content so you can find information on any topic in archaeology from around the world. One way we do that is by recording interviews with our hosts and guests located in many parts of the world all at once. We do that through the use of Zencastr. That's Zencastr. Zencastr allows us to record high quality audio with no stress on the guest. Just send them a link to click on and that's it. Zencastr does the rest. They even do automatic transcriptions. Check out the link in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months, or go to Zencastr.com and use the code TAS. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. That's in the UK, for those of you that don't know. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on pricing and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's P-A-L-E-O imaging.com. And look for the link in the show notes to this episode. Welcome back to segment two, episode 109 of The Archaeology Show. And we are talking about the anthropology and archaeology of Harry Potter. So in the first segment, we set up the series and the show and what we're talking about here. So now let's talk about the culture of Harry Potter. And when we were first talking about this, what I was really talking about here was really I'm interested in how the Muggle culture intersects with the wizarding world.
Right.
Because they talk throughout the movies and presumably the books. I just don't remember as much. about how they want to keep the wizarding world quiet, keep it out of Muggle view. Mm-hmm. You know, you risk exposure to our world. You hear that phrase many times.
Right.
So I understand that there's probably very little influence from the wizarding world on the Muggle world just by default.
Yeah, they're right? working actively to hide it. Right. So for sure.
But one thing they can't actively stop is Muggle influences coming into the wizarding world. And the reason for that is there are clearly, and Hermione Granger is one of them, there are clearly kids born to Muggle parents that grew up until they were 12 years old. And 12-year-olds today have iPads. Some of them have cell phones. Mm-hmm. They have all these interactions and all these things. And all of a sudden, you're going to send them to a, you know, private boarding school with stone walls and a castle in the English countryside. I mean, they're going to bring some of that with them.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know? How do they watch Netflix at Hogwarts is what I want to know.
Well, that is a big question, right? Like, when they step foot onto Hogwarts Express, is all Muggle technology left behind? Like, are no phones allowed?
Yeah.
Are no computers?
Because they've got candles and oil lamps and all kinds of stuff at the castle.
Yeah.
And in presumably in like Hogsmeade, all the places that we see that are purely magical, there's zero technology.
Yeah. There's not even like an electric light, is there?
I don't know, because when they play like Quidditch and it's getting a little bit dark, there's lights, but I can't tell what powers them because they don't really focus on that in the
it
movies.
It could be like magically powered. I'm not really sure.
The point is they never focus on stuff like that. Everything is always lit by some sort of fire or something like that.
You feel like you're in like industrial age Europe, basically, based on the technology that they have.
Pre-industrial age, yeah, really.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
So that's the point. In that universe, what kind of influences and how do they keep those influences down? Because I would assume part of your training as a witch or wizard is really, you know, historical. And this is why we do things this way. This is why, you know, all this is like this. But there are people who are fascinated by Muggle existence. Again, going back to the flying car and, you know, Ron Weasley's dad.
Yeah. And him not understanding what a rubber duck is for.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
That's because these are children's books. And I think we have to remember that sometimes.
I mean, but why would they have a rubber duck? Why is that inherently Muggle?
They don't take baths, obviously.
I mean, that's clear sometimes, I think. But, yeah, so I'm really interested in that, like in the culture of this, in the cultural anthropology aspect. How would they keep those influences from coming into the wizarding world?
And why?
You know?
Why would they want to? Like, why are they trying to keep the wizard culture 200 years behind the rest of the world?
Well, personally, I think it's partly because by keeping it in that way, by actively having magic that inhibits like transmission of radio signals, for example, which is all you'd really need to do to make cell phones and anything else pretty much obsolete there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have that technology now. So if you could do it with magic, it's all that much easier. And if they do that, well, that shuts the kids down, right? The minute they get to Hogwarts or something like that, or whatever school they're going to, it shuts them down from that Muggle world that they were part of, and it brings them into this wizarding world. And they're probably so fascinated by the fact that magic exists that they're more than happy with the trade-off of going back to their original lives.
It's like forming young minds, I guess. It actually makes me understand a little bit more why Mr. Weasley wouldn't know what a rubber duck is, because
active suppression.
Yeah, if you grew up in a magical family where they never had anything from the Muggle world in their house, which I know rubber duck is really pushing it, but he might not know, and then he wouldn't teach his kids, and then like...
But there's a lot of stuff that pushes it. Let's take the Weasley's house as an example, because we see it pretty clearly when lots of times. Mm-hmm. There's examples of knitting. That's Muggle. There's there's clocks.
Yeah.
That's Muggle. She's doing the dishes, albeit magically, but she's using sponges and soap. So, you know, there's definitely well-accepted Muggle influences, including some clothing, although, you know, like ties and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's clearly influenced there. So that was a style that was brought in, had to have been brought in probably like the 20s, 30s, or 40s, because ties didn't really exist before.
You mean like men wearing suit and tie to the Ministry of Magic, for example, for work?
Yeah. They wear a tie under their robe. It's weird, right?
So, oh, yeah. And at school they do. Yeah,
totally. It's part of the uniform.
Yep.
So that's a modern clothing style that has clearly had an influence on the wizarding world.
Yeah, which shows you that the Muggle influence is happening in small ways, maybe, whether they like it or not. They might be able to keep electricity and internet out, but, you know, styles and colors and stuff like that, they can't stop that from influencing it.
Yeah, and I think that it would be somewhat inevitable if they let those kinds of things happen, if they didn't actively stamp that stuff out and kind of shun people that are, you know, embracing more muggle ways, like just living in a normal apartment, for example, or something like that, but also having a magical job. Because all those people that work in London, I mean, do they really all live in a shack in the countryside? Probably not.
Right. And do they all have townhouses that disappear into a row of townhouses?
Yeah, I mean, probably not.
Like, because that's a lot of wizards in the ministry now, but they can apparate there. Apparate or disapparate?
I think disapparate is going away.
Apparate's coming in. Right. Yeah. So they could apparate in from wherever they live. And, you know, that's an option. They could live wherever they wanted.
I don't know if there's a distance on that. Like, maybe it has to do with your power as a wizard or a witch.
I think maybe it does. Yeah.
Like, how far can you go, right? Mm-hmm. Can you go around the world? Could you go to the moon? Right? Could you apparate to Mars?
Right, right.
I mean, what's the, if it's a quantum fluctuation kind of thing, could you apparate to another universe?
I think we're doing the science of Harry Potter right now.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be cool too.
Yeah. But no, yeah, I totally see what you're saying. Like, what are the limits of that particular piece of magic? Unclear.
Right. And where I was going with all this was, I think the active suppression of all the muggle influences would ultimately have a negative effect unless they really kept onto it. Because what does history tell us? Every single segregated society eventually becomes unsegregated because it's not a natural way of things. You have to...
People always want to interact.
You have to suppress certain thoughts, feelings, ideas, cultural influences, entire groups of people in order for that segregation to remain intact. Mm-hmm. And that just never works, ultimately.
Yeah, well, I mean, the main thing here that would cause integration eventually is that some muggles are born with magical powers.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're entering their wizarding world. They're bringing everything they learned in the muggle world for the previous 12 years before they start at Hogwarts or whatever school they go to. They're bringing all of that into the school with them, and they are subtly influencing all the other children in school, even their teachers. And
well, it's a logarithmic effect, though.
Yeah.
Because... like, let's take Hermione, for example. She says time and time again how proud her parents are of her and how she's doing at Hogwarts, implying her parents know she's a witch and is at Hogwarts.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
And I think her parents are even at a few things in the books, like when they do some stuff.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So if her parents know, what do they tell the rest of the family when they're like, oh, where's your daughter? Oh, she's at private school. That's an easy one.
Yeah.
But why didn't she go to college? Why? Because I don't think there's a wizard in college. Never heard of one.
It's more like technical school, right?
The whole thing is kind of like technical school, depending on what you focus on.
Yeah.
But like, why isn't she going to college? Or, you know, what is she doing for a living? Oh, she's an auror. You know, I mean,
that's not a thing.
Yeah. So,
but you can always give some like.
Yeah, but it's sketchy. Just a lie that is hard to keep.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
A real world example is, what does a family tell their friends about a family member who works for the CIA and they're not allowed to talk about it, you know?
Well, I think that the key there is to really be in the CIA. You don't have a family.
All right, Jason Bourne.
I'm just saying. I mean, like, if you work for the CIA and you're like an analyst, you can tell your family.
Yeah.
You just can't tell them what you do. But if you're legit a spy, I think family is the least of your concerns.
No, I know. I'm talking about the run-of-the-mill analyst who works at the CIA and they're not allowed to talk about what they do and they have to be kind of cagey, you know? It's sort of similar.
I think a more close to home example of this that is unfortunate that in 2021, this is still a thing in our society, but gay and lesbian couples. They have a hard, I mean, it's really hard in this society for people to come out like that, right? And they're just not accepted by their families. So there are couples out there that are currently keeping their relationship secret. And that is just, as they know and probably struggle with every single day of their lives, it's not sustainable.
Right.
Somebody's going to find out.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to love this person no matter who they are and live with them and have a life with them. And yet you have to keep the entire thing secret.
Yeah. Yeah. Just can't last forever.
It doesn't work. I mean, the lie is going to come out.
Yep.
So bringing this back to the wizarding world, I think the lie would come out pretty easily and pretty quickly. And while they have the ability to suppress or remove memories, it would be a lot of work.
There's way more muggles than there are wizards. So to keep up on that many people would be impossible, well, isn't, really.
Isn't, why can't I remember his actual name? Ron Weasley's dad. What is his name?
Mr. Weasley.
Yeah, Mr. Weasley, right? His job is not just studying muggles, but actively working at instances where the magic, the wizarding world was...
covering up.
Yeah, it's covering up exposure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's probably done many, many of the charms or whatever that help people wipe out their memories. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just... it seems... now, we're only seeing a small world into this, and there could be thousands of wizards who that's their job, mm-hmm. right? And that could be the most popular job at the ministry, which would make some kind of sense, because the more people there are in a job, chances are the less you're going to get paid, and he clearly isn't well paid. Of course, he also has 19 children. I think there's many Weasleys we don't even know about. But
have you read the books?
I know, right? So, I mean, there's at least one or two that we never see, right?
There's the two older ones. Yeah.
So... yeah, I think he either doesn't spend his money well, because they live in admittedly, it's like a four-story shack, but, you know, they live in like a four-story shack, and they're always made fun of for their secondhand and hand-me-down stuff, so they clearly don't have a lot of money, which means he doesn't have a high-paying job, which would make sense that there's a lot of them mm-hmm. that do that. So, but I think the point here is that the culture does seep in, mm-hmm. because one of the examples we were talking about while we were eating dinner, thinking about this show recording, is... again, in, why can't I remember these? The Goblet of Fire with mm-hmm. the Triwizard Tournament or whatever, they have the ball.
Yeah.
And at the they show them doing their, you know, their fancy dancing. And then all of a sudden, it's a rave with like a punk rock band. If I'm not mistaken, the band in that show was famous too. They just came in and did it.
I will pull my nerd card out though a little bit. I'm pretty sure that's not in the books at all, that they wanted a reason to bring like a modern band into the movies, and it just worked perfectly in that scene.
It would have been hard to articulate in the books, I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think regardless of whether it's in the books, it's part of the canon now, because
yeah,
it's
but
in the movies.
Like just follow that rabbit hole for a second, right? Like there's a band, a new age like counterculture punk band type of thing mm-hmm. that appeals to the kids, and that band has some level of popularity. Where are they performing? Who's going to see their shows? How are they making all this happen? Presumably in the muggle world, because they're not always performing at Hogwarts. They're in the muggle world having these wizard concerts. How is this happening?
I mean, between the Leaky Cauldron and their gigs at Hogsmeade, they're pretty stacked. So I don't think they play anywhere else.
Yeah. Well, again, the world is bigger than what we know of it just from the books and the movie. But it's just another rabbit hole to go down about how something like that develops and how it continues to grow in a culture that is actively suppressing mm-hmm. muggles knowing about wizards.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's so many cultural things that they could adopt, too. Like I was thinking... when we were watching the scene in the last movie that we actually watched, which was
Order of Phoenix.
Fifth I just one. Cannot remember the names or orders of these movies. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when Harry's being brought into the ministry by mm-hmm. Mr. Weasley, there are many, many people. And one thing that always struck me just now thinking about this, they're all wearing like jackets and traveling clothes. Like mm-hmm. they were actually outside.
Like
but
like it's the 1940s outside.
Right, sure. But the point is, you got people coming in through the fireplace, which in a previous movie, we saw them do that from their living room with the flue powder.
Oh, but they have to come in through those specific entrances up on the streets.
Sometimes. The visitor entrance, the phone box was.
Yeah, but they don't they get flushed down the toilet?
There's other ways to do it. Yeah. You're right. So if they have to commute, sure. But my point is, like, why would you commute? You clearly can't apparate into and out of the ministry. I think they prohibit that.
Yeah.
But there's the flu powder. There's the other ways. And I'm just thinking, like, man, if you had the ability to basically get to an adjacent building or wherever this bathroom is that you can flush yourself down, like, there's presumably other ways, too, to get in. But if you could get there with the flick of your wand, like, why wouldn't you just live in sweatpants, right? Like, why would you even have traveling clothes to just go there? And why would you even need to go to work, right? Like, why would you even need to do that? You could just communicate with them through magical means and remote work the whole time. Why even go in?
Well, I think that's where the, like, human bleed over happens, because humans just want to work together. They want to be face-to-face, work together.
Yeah.
All the things that people are whining about with virtual conferences and virtual everything that's happening now because of the pandemic. So
face-to-face, I mean, there's a good thing to say for face-to-face. That is true. But you wouldn't need to do it every single day and commute in. I was really struck by that when we were watching it last night, that why are these people grinding out a 9-to-5? They're wizards and witches. Like, are you seriously going to grind out a 9-to-5?
Again, it's the muggle world creeping in a little bit. Like, they have to make money to live somehow. So they have to have jobs. And some of those jobs are grinding out 9-to-5 at the ministry.
All right. Well, one of those jobs that we talked about was archaeologist. Is there a wizard or witch archaeology profession? And let's bring that up in segment 3. Back in a second. You may have heard my pitch for membership. It's a great idea and really helps out. However, you can also support us by picking up a fun t-shirt, sticker, or something from a large selection of items from our Tee Public store. Head over to arcpodnet.com/shop for a link. That's arcpodnet.com/shop to pick up some fun swag and support the show. Welcome back to the Archaeology Show, episode 109. We are talking about the anthropology and now archaeology of Harry Potter, the series largely based on the movies because that's what we recently watched, but the movies are based on the books, so think about it as you will. But we want to now talk about the archaeological expression in this universe now, not in our universe, but in that universe. What would archaeology look like? What would the past look like in this world? And let's bring this back to segment 1 real quick, because I really wanted to mention this kind of thing. If magic evolved with humanity and presumably pre-humanity, pre-Homo sapiens, all the Homo species, all the way back, then we would see examples of that in the archaeological record, because people wouldn't understand it. People wouldn't know how to use it. And maybe we do in our world today. Like, well, presumably our world is the muggle world of that universe. So when I say our world, I mean the muggle world of that universe. But the muggle world, I mean, there are examples of shamanistic behavior. There are examples like rock art, and people use the words magic to refer to things like that, those types of expression in archaeology in our actual world. So presumably that world as well would have those sorts of things. And in that world, I think maybe it was actually just magic.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very hard for me to wrap my brain around all of this because it gets so convoluted, but I can't get past the question of how do magical beings present themselves in the archaeological record, and are the humans different from muggles and the creatures that we know are magical and that look different? How are they in the archaeological record, or are they not there at all?
Yeah, and that's a good question, because I think just based on what you were saying there, I hadn't really thought about what the humans look differently, but at some point, I think they would. And I think you could find that out when they figured out this spell, because they have the ability to heal bones. Those bones would not show fracture lines from previous breaks.
It's true.
So if you start getting a whole group of humans that have literally never had a broken bone into old age, you got to start thinking, well, except for you.
I've never had a broken bone, so maybe I'm a witch. You don't know.
Now, I'm talking on a population scale. So if you're talking about a whole group, like if you end up on a wizard cemetery, right? Mm-hmm. And you start looking into it and you start doing some archaeology there in the muggle world, and you're like, there's not a single broken bone in this collection of 150 bodies. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no broken bone, there's no disease, there's no expression of anything on the human bone because it was healed magically.
Right.
You know? And presumably that kind of healing would have been some of the earliest magic to have been invented or discovered, I should say.
Probably.
Because I'm not really sure. Is magic isn't created, it's just you discover new ways to use it.
Yeah, that would be my guess. Yeah. Yeah, like what does primitive magic look like?
Yeah.
When they don't have, you know, bone grow and all this stuff like that.
Well, it's like things like making it rain and, you know, having the crops grow. And we explain that stuff away now by saying, well, those people were just crazy. And eventually it did just rain and the crops did just grow.
Mm.
But back then, that could have actually been magic.
So is it possible that it's not hidden from muggle eyes? Past magic is not hidden.
No.
But it's explained away by these shamanistic behaviors that are clear, you know, and present at a lot of different archaeological sites.
Well, people did and still do have a much different relationship in our universe with ideas like that, right? Like back in the day, people would have thought that literally legitimately was magic before mm-hmm. they could explain it. That's why we have the concept of magic here in fiction.
Right. So they don't have to hide the magic back then
because they were just doing it.
Because people just believed in it.
Right. But then we end up with things like the Salem witch trials, where in that universe, maybe they were actual witches.
Right.
But it's funny because the religious people persecuting those witches also kind of believed in their own form of magic when it gets down to their religion.
Right.
Right. Because miracles are inherently magic. Right. Right. So it's kind of strange, the magic you determine that you're going to believe or not. But then there's other expressions of magic historically, too. And this is potentially incredibly controversial. We were talking about this when we were having dinner, but I'm like, yeah, in this world, in our universe, there's a large group of people that think like aliens built the pyramids.
Oh, right.
You know, the Nazca lines, the mounds, Cahokia, stuff like that. You know, Inca and Maya, Aztec, all those things.
Massive architecture, basically.
Yeah. I mean, even going back to like, you know, ancient Roman times and, you know, around the Mediterranean and stuff like that, there was this just phenomenal architecture.
There's a whole show built around it.
Oh, Aliens. Ancient Aliens is crazy. I would imagine in the Harry Potter universe, there is a show like Ancient Aliens, but it's called Ancient Magicians because that is the... Because, again, as we mentioned, there would be cross-references. It would be this hidden thing. It's like UFOs mm-hmm. for us today. People think they're, again, aliens. Mm-hmm. People think, well, there's aliens living among us, but we can't prove it. There must be a whole group of those same people in that universe that think magicians and witches live among us, and we just can't prove it. So all those things are explained by that. So the pyramids were clearly built by wizards. And... things like the Sphinx were just carved out with a wand.
It's entirely possible. I completely believe in that world, talking about it. So
In that world, it's likely. Not even possible. It's likely, right? Like if somebody was in your village that could lift a 14-ton stone with their brain, then hey, guess what, dude? You're building the pyramid now. Mm-hmm. So, and I think it would have been fewer people, which is why it was sort of a fantastical thing back then, because as evolution goes, you know, you start out with literally one person with a trait and that expands out through time. Mm-hmm. So the farther back you go, the fewer people could actually intersect with this magical plane.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. So less to hide, I suppose. Right.
Right. So there's massive architecture, unexplained things that could be expressions of magic on the Muggle world. Mm-hmm. But what other kind of stuff? Because you and I have been talking about, they actively mentioned in the series that, you know, Muggles see what they want to see and you can make something invisible. We talked about the animals, you know, that are invisible magically, but does that magical invisibility extend to their remains? And I would think no in some cases because we have dragons. I mean, we have the word dragon because ancient people saw dinosaur bones and came up with a word for it. And that word was dragon.
Right. Yeah. I don't know because in the plot of the movies and the books, this inherent magicalness of these creatures, it protects them from being seen by humans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And anything that happens by accident, the wizards come in and clean it up. So like it's a pretty good system for living beings. But what about their bones? They have to die at some point, and sometimes they die out in the middle of the woods with no wizard around to take care of the remains. And what happens? Like, does the magic just carry over into the remains until they're completely gone and not recognizable anymore? Like, is it some kind of inbuilt magic? I think that's entirely possible. I could see that happening, but how long does that magic hold for? Does it wear off after a time, you know?
Yeah.
And then the next question my brain goes to, or not question, but actually this is really cool. I would love it if there were like Indiana Jones style archaeologists who were wizards who ran around the wizarding world looking for potential like magical creatures or magical artifacts that got exposed and then cleaning up so that the Muggles don't find it. Okay, there you go. That's my job. If I become a wizard.
A witch.
A witch. She's a witch.
A witch. What do we burn apart from witches? More witches.
Wood.
Wow, we just went down a hole.
Oh yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Showing our nerd again. Anyway, yeah, so that's my job. I want to be a magical archaeologist who runs around and finds things and covers it up so that muggle archaeologists don't accidentally dig up the bones of a dragon.
Yeah, but how do you cover it up? Because are you working for a university as a consultant? Do you own your own magical CRM firm? Do you, and then all of your
magical CRM firm.
And then all of your magic bums are, you know, the magical as well. Because
wand bums.
Yeah, there you go. Because if not, then are you just going there and spinning this web of lies or putting charms on people that say, actually, you know, you're like waving your Jedi mind trick and saying, these aren't the dragons you're looking for. This is dinosaurs. You know,
maybe. Yeah.
By the way, archaeologists don't dig dinosaurs. That was a horrible example.
Oh, yeah. Truly, truly terrible.
But we do dragons because they exist now.
Right. Sure. Whatever you say. Yeah. Yeah. In this case, it's not just remnants of humans that we would be searching and obliterating from mm-hmm. the Muggle record. It would be creatures and whatever else that could give away the wizarding world. So maybe archaeologists isn't the right term for it, but yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, archaeologist is still somebody who studies humans, mm-hmm. but you're right. It might have a different root name because it's not all humans. Yeah. It's magical humans.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And the goal, again, is to keep hiding them from Muggles. So Anyway, cool. I found my job in the wizarding world. Bye.
Nice. Sounds good. Instead of a trowel, you've just got a wand. Could you imagine just kind of like wanding away dirt and not having to do with it?
Man, actually, that sounds kind of amazing.
I know, right? You just like
never have to screen again.
Sit there on your backwards wheelbarrow and you're just like digging with your wand and screening with it.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about magical archaeology, because would you even need to dig?
Yeah, why would you?
Couldn't you just like magic up all the artifacts in like a big cube and mm-hmm. just kind of like slice it up? I mean, why not, right?
So here's a question that takes me down another path. We're talking about a group of people who might be trying to cover up remnants of magic in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But is there also a place for archaeologists in the wizard world who are trying to study the wizarding past, right? Maybe it's because they want to find out what the origin of magic is. We talked about how it could have been an environmental factor, or it's an evolution thing. We've got a common ancestor that goes way, way, way back. Maybe it's that. But is there a group of wizards who are actively digging digs to find out this information?
Yeah, and I would imagine there is, because we know there's historians for a fact,
mm-hmm.
because Hermione has read about it in Hogwarts, a history. And we know that's a thing. So if people are studying the culture of the wizarding world and the history of the wizarding world, it's only natural to assume they would study the people and artifacts left behind by the wizarding world. And in fact, that is part of the plot of the last two movies in the last book, Deathly Hallows, is Harry Potter's going around trying to find these things
mm-hmm.
that will help in defeating Voldemort that were, I haven't seen these movies in a while. Oh, sorry, I said his name. But these things are also very old.
The Horcruxes?
Not those, but the actual Deathly Hallows objects.
Oh, yeah.
But from what I understand, those things are actually really old.
Yeah,
right?
They're
basically artifacts.
Yeah.
You know, if not heirlooms, but definitely artifacts. And mm-hmm. from another time and another you know, another mm-hmm. place, really. So that's what we do. So presumably they would have those people studying that, mm-hmm. you know. But I'm still wondering about the archaeologist that intersects with the Muggle world. And do they just, again, spin a web of lies, or do they get there first, you know, when a discovery is made and just like disrupt it?
Yeah.
Like, how do they do that? Because you can't do anything really in post about the chance discovery that the news media pounced on pretty quickly. And when they're digging a highway or something, the magicians aren't going to be the first mm-hmm. ones called, right?
Yeah, but they could bury it, you know, like you know, journalism is very subjective in that way, that you could bury that story with other stories.
Well,
you know?
Presumably if they have the support of the crown and the prime minister, mm-hmm. then the prime minister would be actively trying to suppress it as well.
And they have magic, right? Like,
well, and then there's magic.
You're led to believe magic can do anything. So,
right. Again, which is a little bit of a plot hole, because if it can do anything, why do you even have a crappy job to begin with? You know, why not just magic yourself some fancy clothes in a nice house and be done with it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you get a house elf? They're clearly the most magical people on the world.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they have more power than pretty much all the other magicians.
So you're into slavery then, huh?
I mean, I'm just saying. No, I mean, maybe you just have one as like a roommate who does all your things.
That's terrible.
I'm just saying. So anyway, I don't know how much more we can say on this, but it is an interesting topic when you think about life in another plane of existence, another mm-hmm. universe. You know, what does that actually look like? How does that look in the archaeological record? Because things like wands and stuff, you know.
Oh, true.
But wands are wooden. And in certain environments, that wood's just going to degrade and go away. But mm-hmm. does it? Mm-hmm. Is it imbued with magical properties that prevent that from happening? Mm-hmm. Although they can be broken, of course, because we've seen wands break in the movies and in the books. Mm-hmm. So we know that's a thing. But after it breaks, is it no longer magical? You know?
They would say no, it just doesn't work as well if it's broken. So
I guess it still does kind of work, though, doesn't
it? Yeah, it just works poorly. So
yeah.
But like if a wizard loses his wand out on a hike in the woods and can't find it, like, is it just a magical item that's laying there that a muggle could come along and potentially recognize it for what it is? Mm-hmm. Or is it cloaking itself? Like you're led to believe that a lot of magical creatures and magical items do. So
yeah. And I feel like with the example of dragon bones being mistaken for dinosaurs, mm-hmm. which presumably there were also 65 million year old dragons, so why not, right?
Sure.
But I would imagine that the magical properties of them, part of those magical properties is just confusing the people who found them. It's like they don't find something and not see it. They find it and think it's something else, or they don't give it another thought. Like if we're on a hike today, for example, we went on a hike. If we saw a wand sitting there, you know how many sticks we saw just sitting on the ground that right. I thought were snakes? They weren't snakes. They were just sticks. But if some of them were magical wands left mm-hmm. by the wayside, then I would have just seen it as a stick mm-hmm. because I'm not magical, mm-hmm. right? So that's kind of the proof, which is actually quite sad. But it also makes me wonder if the world is just littered with magical trash from like the last 10,000 years.
Oh, that is such a good question. And another question that I kind of have about that is that does the magic wear off at some point?
Yeah.
Like are these super old magical items in danger of being exposed to the muggle world as the magic wears off? Or is it just this never-ending well of magic that just keeps them hidden?
Well, and again, it would depend on the half-life of the magical particles within, right? Because if we're talking about some sort of thing within you organically that allows you to interact with the magical plane, mm-hmm. then presumably that would have some sort of half-life if it's just regular physics, which it would be. It's just another branch of physics, right? It's the magic side of physics.
Right.
But if that's the case, then it would. But then I'm coming back on that because you could make things like a car, a flying car, and the car clearly has its own attitude as well, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just a flying car. It's a personality.
Yeah.
Right? The car has a personality. So how do you do that? You know, are you...
That was sort of an example of like muggle world plus magic going wrong, I think, a little bit.
Yeah,
like it doesn't always mix the way it's supposed to or the way you expect it to. So,
but then you got dead things like brooms. I wonder if a broom has something inside of it like a wand does, because a wand is just a stick.
Right.
But what makes the wand special is the core, right? It's got a core of something else, you know, a unicorn hair or...
Yeah, that's a good
question. They imbued with some sort of organic element that allows it to intersect the magical world?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
And if you take that thing out, does that mean it's
just a stick
or just a broom now?
Yeah.
And therefore can be left in the regular world without any consequences.
Who knows?
That all big questions. Don't know the answer.
I see a PhD in this somewhere. Hey, I know some people who got their master's degrees on studying The Simpsons, so stranger things have happened. You know?
I mean, what's really fun about worlds like Harry Potter's is that the author, J.K. Rowling, could not flesh out the anthropology of the world. That's just not the kind of thing that could happen. The series isn't big enough for that. It's just not going to happen. So that just leaves us as archaeologists and anthropologists to step into that hole and flesh it out for her.
There you go.
Thanks, J.K.
Are we seeing thanks, J.K.? Or thanks, J.K.?
Take your pick.
All right. Well, what movie do you want us to talk about next? Because we've talked about a lot of them, but there are some that you have to really kind of tread lightly, because I'd like it to be a different universe and we discuss what life is like in that universe, right? So we could actually do the Indiana Jones series because there's legit magic in the Indiana Jones series.
Sure. Yeah, right? That's because, possible.
Because it's unlikely that the Ark of the Covenant can melt faces. I'm not going to say it can't because we've never found it.
Or heal wounds and make people whole again.
Yeah, or make you live forever like the cup, yeah. You know, if you stay there. So there's clearly magic and we could talk about Indiana Jones from another plane of existence standpoint. But what other... It's really hard to talk about other movies in that way because I like to talk about stuff that's set in the real world.
Yeah.
But parallel to it.
Yeah. Cause like Lord of the Rings wouldn't be super great because it doesn't intersect a world that looks anything like ours. It's a complete own universe.
It looks strikingly like New Zealand though. But it's not.
Right.
Right. That's not even Middle Earth. It's like side into the right, side and down into the right Earth.
Right. If you take out where the movies were filmed, the setting itself is completely magical. So
was
anyway.
That filmed in New Zealand? I thought it just looked
what?
Like New Zealand. All right. With that, send us an email, chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com, or head over to archpodnet.com/archaeology, and you can find our contact info there. So this was a fun one. I'm sure we're going to do more in the future. If you thought this was completely garbage, then let us know that too, because we don't want to do more episodes like this if you just didn't like it. So
yeah, I mean, we had a lot of fun.
I know,
chatting about Harry Potter, one of my favorite topics. But if you don't want to hear it, totally cool, let us know.
I think the point of this episode is that you can use your lens of archaeology and science to analyze things around you in your world, and it is kind of fun to do that and think about how those things would exist.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Yeah. All right, so we'll be back next time with, I don't know, something else. See you in a week. Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.archpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ArchPodNet. You can also find us on the Lyceum app, a podcast app just for educational podcasts. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV Traveling America, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Chris Webster and Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US dollars a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.